Bet the Board in conjunction with NASCAR presents Stay Green. Stay Green is your first stop for all the metrics, matchups, and money-making opportunities at the track each race week. This is Stay Green, the NASCAR betting podcast. Here are your hosts, Todd Furman and racing analyst Chris Wormy.
Welcome into the Stay Green podcast, a Bet the Board production in conjunction with NASCAR. We put a bow on everything that unfolded last weekend at Michigan International Speedway. We shift our focus to everything we can expect at Richmond Raceway. And as always, some do's and don'ts as far as putting together your NASCAR betting card. I'm your host, Todd Furman, joined as always by my esteemed colleague and racing analyst, Chris Wormy. And Worm, Michigan, I'm not sure if it was good, it was bad, or it was indifferent, but the bottom line is NASCAR could be headed for a scenario that I'm sure they envisioned back in 2014. Too many winners for only 16 spots.
Well, yeah, not to mention, you're talking about a car that's, by the way, a driver that's really good at Phoenix. So I know that he's got a long way to go to get there, but I'll tell you what, no one wants to see that four team in the Final Four, especially at a track where he's dominated in the past.
Gets to be a little bit scary when you give the old man some strength and a little bit of confidence to get himself right into the mix. And for those folks that are tuning into the Stay Green podcast for the first time, stage one, it's all about what we saw transpire the week before at the track, things that we've learned drivers to focus on a bit. Stage two, we get in a little bit more of the machinations as it pertains to putting together your betting card and some things that we can peel back the curtain a little bit and teach you here on the Stay Green podcast that you're not going to find anywhere else. And most importantly, maybe the look-ahead preview to Richmond Raceway this week with only three races remaining in the NASCAR regular season. You, of course, can follow Chris on Twitter. That's at Chris Wormy, C-H-R-I-S-W-E-R-M-E-1-5. I'm Todd Furman. You can follow me there, and most importantly, follow the podcast at Bet the Board Pod. And you talked a little bit about Kevin Harvick, Worm. He can kiss his 65 race winless streak goodbye. Gave Ford its eighth straight victory at Michigan. And more importantly, from the four, he got a little bit of good fortune, but he continued to do the things that we've seen all season long. May not have had race winning speed when the race started, may not have had race winning speed when the race ended, but he found his opportunity. He was able to cash in those chips and drive in a victory lane.
Well, I think it's what you need to be a championship, you know, a championship caliber driver and team. You know, he did get very fortunate. I mean, to have Denny have the speeding penalty and for him to be able to get that push on the restart. So, but here's the other thing. I mean, he got out to like a 4.5 second lead. It wasn't like he just barely got out to a lead. Yeah, he did have some help from Logano, kind of holding up the field, but you know, he's just been so patient all year, and he always tends to look average in practice, and he's just so patient, and you find him kind of in the top five with, you know, the last 30% of the race. You're like, oh my gosh, can Kevin Harvick get this thing done? And it's a true testament to that whole SHR team, especially that four squad.
Pretty wild when you consider that Harvick ends up leading 38 laps at Michigan, a track where he's known to have quite a bit of success, maybe even as much as what he's put on the books at Phoenix, a far cry from the 13 total laps led through the first 22 races of the season. And when you read some of Harvick's comments in the wake of that first victory, I mean, he goes back and credits the 50-minute practice session at Nashville for basically changing their entire season. As a result, you see Harvick go from roughly 60-1 to win the chase down to 18-1 in some shops. I'm not sure you'd want to buy at the top of the market here, but he now remains the only driver to qualify every year since the format was introduced in 2014. And Harvick, you could see a little bit of that relief in his voice. You could tell that he was excited about it. But maybe most importantly, he was able to take his daughter Piper around in the car, much like we saw Keelan Harvick a couple of years ago. So credit to the four team, and as you mentioned, SHR, for getting yet another driver to punch his ticket to the playoffs. Now, when we look at Harvick, we can say what we want about that. I got to ask you, from it comes to handicapping Michigan with the current package and tire, I do want to get into this a little bit more in depth, but in your opinion, was it a good race? Did you find the importance of tires or lack thereof play a role in some of your takeaways? And as far as strategy, did you feel that helped you put together a betting card? And I only want you to tease this a little bit because we will do a deeper dive in stage two.
Yeah, it's really hard to say what's a good race and what's not. You know, it kind of depends on your interpretation of good. You know, for me, I have to look at it through a betting lens. You know, what was the race good for me to bet? Did I think that there was predictability in some of the metrics that I look at? I never want to be the guy that says, like, you know, it wasn't a good race because I didn't win money. You know, as much as I'd like to be, you know, that guy, I just don't want to be that guy. And Michigan was tough this year, and I think we'll get more into it in stage two. But, you know, was it a good race? It depends on what kind of racing you like. If you like that very aero-sensitive racing, then yes, it was a great race. If you like tire wear and you don't like strategy to kind of come into play, then no, it probably wasn't a good race. From a betting perspective, it was a little harder from a predictability standpoint than I usually expect from MIS.
The one thing in watching that race, and I know it's not possible, but for anybody that watches motorsports, you try and figure out the importance of tires and how that's going to factor into the handicapping. I would have loved to see one of these teams go, you know what, the hell with it from a strategy standpoint. We're going to try and run the race on two sets of tires because there's absolutely no fall off and just push this thing to the absolute max until the tires cord up on us. Because you did see a number of cars with a little, you know, splash and go type strategy. You saw them take two tires. You saw them take four. And I'm not sure there was any major takeaway that you're going to be able to apply going forward. But we'll get into a little bit more of that and how it should impact the way you view it, to use your terminology, viewing it through a betting lens. As we always do with stage one, I think one of the biggest things is always driver takeaways. And no better place to start, in my opinion, than with a driver who went off a heavy, heavy favorite to win the race. But his day was over before most people get through their first six-pack of Busch Light. And that, of course, was Kyle Busch, who has yet another race he'd like to forget. It makes eight straight finishes without a top 10. His average finish over that span is 24th. He's got three finishes of 30 or worse. And it's hard for me to say, Worm, that it's about the car, it's about anything else. You begin to wonder, is the focus there for the 18, or is he just getting so impatient if things don't go exactly the way he drew them up over the first 25 to 30 laps?
Yeah, I would say that's been, I guess, as a whole, the entire year, yes, he hasn't been very patient. I think this week was more of just kind of a fluke. You know, you had slower cars with older tires, and you had a lot of fast cars with fresher tires. I mean, that's a recipe for disaster. I don't care what track you're at, especially Michigan. Well, you know what? Let me take that back. It does matter which track you're at, because if it happens at Richmond, you might only have damage, but you can stay in the race and maybe ride around in the lead lap. But at Michigan, you're going 180 to 200 miles an hour, and you wreck, you're out. Your day is done. So I don't know. I mean, listen, Kyle Busch was going to be good in that race. I think that, you know, just because he had Toyota under the hood meant that he would be fast. Now, you know, did he have a top three car? Yeah, probably. But we don't know if it was a race winning car, and we don't know how strategy would have played out. But, you know, that he just gets impatient. And this was just, this wasn't one of those impatient moments, but it certainly was kind of just a moment that kind of encompassed what the 18 team has seen all season long. And that's just inconsistency and poorly timed mistakes.
You know, it's one of those things that kind of become uncharacteristic, and obviously there's a little bit of bad luck that goes into all of it. The 18 has had some good machines, and you just keep waiting for him to get that win, because even the one win he did have earlier this year at Bristol, it wasn't because he had the best car. You get a dust-up late between Tyler Reddick and Chase Briscoe that allows Kyle to grab the checkered flag, but he still remains one of the scariest drivers out there, because once everything starts working for him, the rest of the field will take notice. And for all of Kyle's struggles, You know, his teammate has had race-winning machines, and while Denny Hamlin shouldn't be angry about a podium finish, he had every opportunity to win this race, yet the 11 continues to be one of the kings of self-destructing. Countless penalties on pit road, whether they're speeding, whether it's too many men over the wall, uncontrolled tires, you name it, and he even addressed it in not so many words in some of his post-race comments. But assessing the 11, you go through, they've continued to have speed and race-winning speed almost every week. He just can't seem to maintain some of that momentum and grab a lot of those checkered flags.
Yeah, this team could have won a lot of races this year. It's that 11 team is performing the exact opposite of the 9 team right now. The 9 team doesn't show speed, but they're getting finishes. The 11 team shows speed, but they can't seem to buy a finish. Now, I don't want to say buy a finish per se, because obviously he still finished third, but they aren't finishing better than the car. They're finishing worse than the speed of the car. And that's the opposite of what the 9 team's doing. And look who's leading the points. I mean, and has more wins. It's incredible that kind of how bad this 11 team has finished relative to the cars that Denny Hamlin has had. So it's just more of the same. You know, he's a late race penalty and then still a rocket, an absolute rocket ship. If Harvick doesn't get out to a 4-second lead, I guarantee you Childers on that radio is panicking a little bit more, because that 11 car was flying those last 20 laps or so.
Yeah, if there's not a long green flag run to close things out, and there was a very real possibility that we could have had a late caution when Daniel Suarez got himself into a little bit of trouble, that the 11 probably becomes the race favorite, knowing he gets a good restart, he's able to get off with good starting speed. Suddenly, he's grabbing that elusive win despite some of the self-inflicted wounds that we've seen almost on a weekly basis. When you look at Denny and JGR, we know that they've brought it every single week, but a pleasant surprise has obviously been, you know, what we're seeing from 2311, and specifically from Bubba Wallace, who's getting close to breaking through for a win. You look at what the 23 car has done, it's now 4 straight top 10 finishes, and while you hate to say changing a pit crew really could have made this kind of difference, I mean, Bubba was his own worst enemy. He was a lot more pessimistic than what I expected in his post-race comments. But the 23, the light may be going on, and when he's got fast cars, he is quickly becoming one of the drivers to watch every week.
Well, he's on one of the better streaks that we've seen this year in NASCAR. I mean, if you look back to New Hampshire, Pocono, Indy, and Michigan, he's third, eighth, fifth, and second. And those weren't mistakes. Like, those were fast cars, and those were, like, true finishes. It wasn't like he stole track position, maybe a little bit at Indy. But, I mean, he was fast at Pocono. He was definitely fast at New Hampshire, and he was certainly fast at Michigan. Like I said, I think that Harvick has to be really happy that Logano was out there just holding up the field. But, you know, you look at some of the other great stretches we've had so far this season when it comes to just great finishes. You know, you have a little bit with you know, the 99, where, you know, kind of Nashville to Pocono, he had some great finishes. You can also look at, obviously, Chase Elliott with the Nashville to, you know, Pocono as well, with some great finishes. And then, you know, there's some other teams that have been I mean, obviously Chastain. I mean, he was good from Gateway to New Hampshire. He was, you know, a top 10 guy. But right there, you have to put this 23 car. And I've been critical of Bubba in the past. And you know what? This team has some speed, and he's finally gaining a little bit of trust, whether my trust is worth something or not. I'm willing to start maybe backing him in some matchups where I think that there's some value. You know, sometimes it's hard to back drivers you don't trust, you know, that tend to just, for lack of a better term, they just disappear. You know, they might be running top five for the first third of the race, and then they just find themselves, you know, kind of mired in 20th for the rest of the race. Bubba's not that guy anymore. You start to see him get these finishes and pass cars late, and that's kind of a sign that this team's headed in the right direction. And Bubba is a driver.
Yeah, and Bubba, of course, you know, has his hands full over the next couple weeks. Richmond gives him a much better opportunity, in my opinion, than Watkins Glen. And, of course, the wild card Daytona. We know how he's been able to raid at restrictor plate tracks in the past. So, obviously, the opportunity is there for him to steal a bid into the NASCAR playoffs. A driver that had speed, but, in my opinion, not a race-winning car, thankfully allowed us to cash our best bet head-to-head matchup on Sunday, was Kyle Larson. A costly penalty, speeding on pit road, shuffled him to the back of the lead lap. Interesting storyline, though, for Larson heading into this weekend. He's trying to qualify for the Knoxville Nationals A main event, but since Richmond qualifying is Saturday night, he's got to make sure that he's ready to go on the dirt. Otherwise, he's not going to have a chance to race. But when you look at Kyle Larson, getting better but still not race-winning cars, at the same time, you have to think some of that confidence is coming around.
Well, I'll say this about Kyle Larson. You know, it's certainly not the same car we saw last year. But the guy's making passes. You know, he's one of the guys that if he goes to the rear, he's able to work his way back up into the top five. He might not do it as quickly as some of these JGR cars. But outside of like the 11, the 5, 20, the 1, and, you know, maybe the 18, those are the only guys that when they make a mistake, and, well, fortunately, they've made a lot of them this year, so we've been able to see it, but they're able to make passes and actually drive their way back to the front. And I'm not talking about stealing track position with a timely caution. I'm talking about passing a lot of cars. And I think that those are some of the guys that they have so much experience making passes that they really know the adjustments they need to make later in the race. And I think it's really helped them to get great finishes. So, you know, even though we haven't seen the same race winning speed from Kyle Larson, I still think the fact he's passed a lot of cars this year might bode well for the playoffs.
Two drivers who obviously see the pressure get ratcheted up, and I know we'll talk about them and their prospects for this Sunday at Richmond, would be Martin Truex Jr. and Ryan Blaney, hotly contesting the final playoff spot. The first Richmond race, both had good runs. But when you look at the way these two guys have gone, I mean, the points are there, the finishes are, the wins have been elusive. I'm trying to figure out how to properly price and assess where these guys are. Obviously, Truex, hey, look, he's the favorite for good reason going into the race at Richmond. Ryan Blaney, he's got some opportunities there. But what were some of your takeaways with those two drivers knowing everything that was at stake last weekend?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I try not to look too far back when it comes to, yeah, hey, you know, this is the chase or the playoffs. This weekend, I think, is... This weekend's going to be huge. I just think that I think one of these guys is going to have to win, you know, to really cement themselves, obviously to cement themselves. But, man, they've been trading back and forth, and Blaney looks fast in qualifying and in practice. And Truex is one of those guys that just kind of he rides around and is showing a lot of patience and is able to kind of work his way up through the field. Man, it's going to be really interesting this week. You're probably going to see Blaney qualify really well. And I imagine that Truex is going to race way better than he looks in practice. This is a true coin toss. I really don't know what to expect. I wouldn't be shocked if either one of them went on and won this weekend.
Hey, pressure bursts pipes, but it also creates diamonds. So when you look at these two guys, I don't think either one of them wants to go into Daytona hoping that they have to point themselves into the playoffs. Two drivers that have shown race-winning speed just haven't been able to close the deal. We wave the white flag on stage one, and as always, Worm, I want to open up the floor to you. Any other drivers or things that you saw at Michigan that you thought were worth highlighting for our audience?
I mean, did you see the quote where Ty Gibbs said he's getting 10 to 12 hours of sleep a night?
You know, it must be nice to be 19 years old and have your grandfather own a NASCAR team that you're afforded that luxury.
I mean, when was the last time, honestly, when was the last time you slept for 10 hours?
I mean, completely sober or non-COVID
related?
No,
yeah, sober. Yeah, sober, healthy, like...
Oh, it's at least 15 years. I mean, I'd kill
15
most...
15 years, for sure.
I'd kill most nights for 8 hours of uninterrupted sleep, which I know is a pipe dream.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, I wear one of those Whoops, and it's always like, you know, 5 hours and 7 minutes, and I'm like, oh, wow, that's a lot of sleep for me. I mean, it's just crazy, 10 to 12 hours. Oh, my goodness. But, no, I think I'm impressed with Ty Gibbs. I actually like the way he races more in the Cup Series than he does in the Xfinity Series. I feel like there's, like, this entitlement that he has in the Xfinity Series, whereas in the Cup Series, he's like, listen, this is a, you know, it's almost like an honor to be here, and I know that I'm really young, and I have a lot of talent, and he races properly, and to see him get that 10th place finish, or I think it was 10th. I thought it was pretty impressive. You know, also Toyota under the hood, that certainly helped. But slowly but surely, Ty Gibbs is winning me over when it comes to his maturity at the Cup level. Still, jury's out a little bit. Although in the Xfinity Series this week, he had a third or fourth place car, and he went out and won with it. And that, to me, is a big step for him, because in the past, he's only won with the best car. And for him to actually take that third or fourth place car, they got a little track position in the Xfinity Series at Michigan, and he was able to hold off a fast charging 7 and 9 car, cars that were definitely faster than his. So I thought that showed a level of maturity that I haven't seen from him in the Xfinity Series.
Yeah, someone who had a ticket on Justin Allgaier at 4.5 to 1, I was not thrilled to see that, but we'll give Ty Gibbs credit where credit is due. And I think with each passing week, the unfortunate reality here is if you're a fan of Kyle Busch, that Ty Gibbs is laying claim to potentially grabbing that seat. And as time continues to go on with no secured sponsorship, you do wonder where Kyle Busch will be racing in the 2023 season and beyond. What I did find interesting about Ty, though, is he said that driving the Xfinity car has helped him more in Cup than driving the Cup car going back to the Xfinity. And I think it just speaks to how different these two cars really are on a week-in, week-out basis. The one last thing I'll leave you with in Stage 1, you mentioned the Whoop app and tracking your sleep. I use a different app, and I'm pulling up my numbers from last night. 52 out of 100. That would be a failing grade. And Worm, according to these metrics, I achieved 10 minutes of REM sleep for the 6 hours I was in bed. So if I happen to lose my train of thought later on in the show, you'll know exactly why.
Well, I got you beat. I got 6 hours and 2 minutes of sleep. And my REM sleep, I got 1 hour and 22 minutes. So yeah, I'm Worm 1, Todd 0.
Well, the important part is there's a reason you're the analyst and I'm the host. You carry the show week to week anyway, so it makes my job significantly easier. That's the end of Stage 1 with the green, white, checkered flag in the air. I want to encourage all of you to follow Chris on Twitter. That's at ChrisWormy15. I'm Todd Furman. You can follow me there. And most importantly, follow the podcast and the podcast network at BetTheBoardPod. And we teased a little bit of this earlier on in the show, talking about Stage 2 and what it means to individual betting and some of the takeaways to try and turn a lot of our audience that may just be betting NASCAR for the first time are always looking for some of those helpful hints to take their NASCAR betting to the next level. And you texted me in the wake of Michigan, you know, going final about track-specific risk and exposure. When you look at Michigan, we obviously hit on this a little bit with Indy and how we would take a much more guarded approach should they be on the road course next year. Can the same things be said given what we saw at Michigan, that aero sensitivity, the inability to pass, and a tire compound that we hadn't seen Goodyear roll out up until this past Sunday?
Yeah, this is a rant, probably.
We can always have that. I mean, the floor is yours. That's the great part about a podcast. We don't have to fulfill certain time obligations or anything along those lines.
Yeah, this is where I really think that I think the pros really separate themselves from the Joes. And you know, I never really know who wins on Twitter, you know, who's like someone that's consistently making money and does it professionally. Because, right, whenever someone has a bad week, they're like, ah, bad week, down this many units, on to the next week. And then there's people that win. And then when they win, it's like your timeline is just filled with retweets of, oh, thank you so much, I played Harvick at 25 to 1. And it's like, okay, it seems like everybody wins every week because your timeline's filled with all winners when one group wins, and then the next week a different group wins, and then your timeline's filled with that. So it's really hard to kind of distinguish who actually makes money. Now, that's not necessarily like the point I'm trying to make. The point I'm trying to make is like it's very important that if you lose, you objectively go back and look and say, hey, here's where I was right and here's where I was wrong. And I know that I've said that multiple times, but like I see some of these race cards that guys have and guys that I respect, guys that I truly think know a lot about the sport. And it's almost like you can pinpoint if one thing happens, like an untimely caution, this card is in big trouble because of the juice that they've paid on matchups. You know, there needs to be like a level of like anti-fragility to your card. Like if you were to just say, you know what, we're going to invert the field, and now the back is going to start at the front and the front is going to start at the rear, would you still like your bets? And if the answer is no, you're probably making way too many bets. And if you're paying juice, you're definitely paying way too much. Like if I'm playing a matchup, I have to go through, like, if this race gets turned upside down, can my guy drive past the other driver? And if the answer is no, I don't care what the price is, I'm not going to pay it. Like it has, like losing is not an option for me. Like I can't lose, right? Where, you know, sometimes people are making value bets. Like sometimes I don't even know what a value bet is. I would say the only...
Well, I think value bets take on a very different connotation. And I think, you know, to your point, not to cut you off and lose your train of thought, but it's one of those feel-good words that bettors use, not just in NASCAR, but in other sports when they want to try and create a legitimate case in their mind for a long shot or whatever it may be, an underdog, you know, even a favorite in some cases. They go, oh, well, that was a value bet. Now, if you can quantify that particular value that you have in a number, then it makes sense. And if you're going to make that bet 99 times out of 100, by all means, try and do that. But if you're looking to try and justify a late ad or anything else along those lines, the books love you to try and put together bigger and bigger cards if you can't figure out exactly what that given edge is going to be, regardless of the market.
Yeah, that's a great segue into something I hear often, which is, I'll just ask a question, like, what was that last bet you made, or why did you bet on him to win? And I get something like, well, I wanted to add another outright for the race. Like, I don't know what the hell that means. What do you mean you wanted to add another outright? Like, the odds haven't changed. The bets are the bets. Like, you cannot force plays. If you're forcing anything, oh, I wanted to bet 3 units in outrights or 10 units or some arbitrary amount of money. Like, that's not a thing. The difference between me having 0 bets in a race and 10 bets in the race, I have the same feeling going in. Like, it doesn't change. You have to let the bets come to you. You can't go out and force things. Sometimes there are races where there's just not a lot of value. And for us this week, it was a light card. I mean, we had, what, two matchups that we played?
Yeah.
And we won top five. And the top five was out, you know, right away with Kyle Busch.
Well, two top fives when you look at Kyle Busch that lost and Christopher Bell.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah,
Chris Bell.
Bell is a good bet. It just didn't win, and that's a bet we're going to make over and over again and over the long haul. The number we grabbed and gave out to listeners is a bet you're going to expect to cash. Unfortunately, this particular week, it didn't get us to the victory lane.
Yeah, I just think that, you know, you don't have to force bets, and the just the same thought process or the same feeling I have when I approach a race, whether I have 0 bets or I have 15 bets, I feel the same way. Like, I made the plays that were available. And if you're out there looking for them, you're never going to find them. That's when you start forcing things. And listen, there's so much data out here there in the NASCAR world. You can almost justify any side with any relevant data if you want. And I just don't think that that's, you know, healthy if you're trying to make money in the long run. So I just think when I did the Twitter poll, I asked, what did people learn about this race, you know, that they can kind of use to help them make money in the future? Well, and there was a little bit of a failure on the Twitter side. I was looking for, well, Michigan with this tire isn't as predictable as I thought it was going to be. That's what I was looking for. Instead, I got a lot of things that were justifying some of the plays that people had made. So my takeaway was, I'm not super excited about this tire in Michigan next year, which means I'm probably not going to lay, you know, more than minus 130 on a matchup, just because, listen, if there's no tire fall off and Kyle Busch is going to end up behind JJ Yaley on a restart and JJ Yaley can't keep the car underneath him, well, why would I ever play Kyle Busch in a matchup? Because there's going to be a time when slower cars are going to stay out without tires and fast cars are going to pit with 4 tires. That's a recipe for disaster. So I just think it's really, really important to just take a look back and go, whoops, maybe this race is one that I'd like to be a little bit more selective on what I play. And I think that that could change with the tire. So I will put a little asterisk there and say, hey, if there's a different tire that comes with a little bit more fall off and we can see that in practice next year, well, that's great. I don't think we'll see the strategy plays. But until then, I am going to still tread lightly on this track again next year if this is the same tire.
And the thing about it is, none of this discussion is meant to disparage folks that are out there that are still learning. They're trying to figure out the errors of their way and fine-tune the process. Everyone goes about their betting, whether it's NASCAR or any other sport, a variety of different ways. But I think a lot of the points you hit on should resonate, not just when you're putting together a race card, but when you're looking at a football weekend, for example, as it's coming up. Because a question that frequently gets asked of me, well, what's the right or wrong number of bets to make? And everybody has different bankroll constraints, which is why I always harp on on, play within your means. So when you have an opportunity in a race where you may find 8 to 10 matchups, you're able to bet all of those instead of saying, you know what, I'm just going to cap my matchups at 3, and you end up chasing 2 out of 3 matchups at a particular track that don't offer value, and you're passing up a lot of good opportunities. So rather than looking at it at the micro level, especially in NASCAR, whether it's the outrights, whether it's head-to-heads, or a variety of other top 3, top 5, top 10 finishes, look at it at the macro for the entire season and realize if I pass on a race this week, there's going to be better opportunities somewhere down the road, and that's what I want to save my fresh powder for. So when I need to jump in with both feet, I can invest and really trust your process. Again, this comes over time. We don't expect folks that are new to betting NASCAR and this is their first foray into it to grasp all of this, but I think it's a valuable lesson that applies not just to NASCAR and race cards on a given weekend, but also what you're looking to try and do in any sort of your gambling endeavors, especially where there's a money line component in it instead of just laying the traditional 11 to 10 like you grow accustomed to in basketball, football, what have you.
Yeah, I think that you're as qualified as anybody to kind of talk about. You're as qualified as anybody to talk about this. And can I actually take a cut at these on-track activities, by the way?
Oh, you want to take a stab? I mean, I figure you wanted to read them because you're actually going to be there for these on-track activities.
And well, I hope so.
Well, yeah, fingers crossed that you're not going trains, planes, and automobiles to try and be able to get across not just one country, but two. And before you take a stab at the on-track activities, I want to tell all of our listeners out there that if you do happen to find yourself at Richmond Raceway, tweet us, let us know. We'd love to meet a lot of you guys. Chris gets out to more tracks than I do, and this is probably the last time I get to leave the house before football season, but we're looking forward to it. We know NASCAR has put together a great opportunity for us to be part of the community, and which should be a great race weekend, but the floor is yours to read the on-track activities.
Yeah, come out and shoot us some DMs, and we're willing to meet and chat about NASCAR and NASCAR betting, and especially Richmond. So if you're gonna head to the race, slide it in the DMs and we'll see if we can meet up. So when you asked me to do this last week, I didn't realize how simple it was. I wish I had looked. I just panicked. And I was like, oh my gosh, Todd's so good at this. There's no way I could do it. And then I realized it was only like 3 lines. I could have read that.
Time zones are difficult. Worm, time zones are difficult. And if you screw up time zones, all hell is going to break loose.
I know. Okay, so here's my first. I'm really nervous all of a sudden. Okay. Fortunately, we only have 2 days of on-track activities this weekend on Saturday and Sunday. First up at 3 o'clock Eastern, we'll have the Camping World Truck Series practice on FS1. That'll be quickly followed up by qualifying for the trucks on FS1 as well. That'll be at 3:30. Then we'll be on to the Cup Series practice at 5:05 Eastern. And right after that at 5:50, we'll have Cup qualifying. So right back to back again. And then that night at 8 p.m. Eastern, we have the Worldwide Express 250 for carrier appreciation on FS1 as well. Those two Cup practices will be on USA. I should probably include that. And then on Sunday, we will have at 3 p.m. Eastern, the Federated Auto Parts 400 on USA, where you can watch us hopefully make some money.
Very well done, and we're also going to try and get some fresh social content out there as well. You're not going to make me get to the track Saturday afternoon for trucks practice, are you?
Oh, yeah. Discussing what we wanted to do this weekend with NASCAR was hilarious. Like, well, do you guys want to watch the start of the race and then go to a brewery? It's like, no. We want to watch the whole race at the track. So, yeah, we'll be there for all on-track activities, Todd.
What a day that we have in front of us. So hopefully you can get us a truck winner, and maybe for the folks that follow you on Twitter, you'll be so generous to throw one out there. But as always, as it pertains to Sunday and the head-to-head matchups, encourage you guys, if you're not following the podcast, to do so at BetTheBoardPod. That's where we'll post our numbers when the markets are a little bit more liquid. And as we've seen over the last couple weeks, those prices can move quickly. So encourage folks to check that out. But plenty of great race activities. 3 races to go in the NASCAR regular season. We're already into the playoffs as far as the Camping World Trucks are concerned. We're waving the green white checkered flag on stage 2, and we're on to stage 3, which of course is a race preview for this weekend. And Richmond Raceway, 3/4 mile flat D-shaped oval, 60 feet wide with a 10-foot apron, 14-degree banking in all of the turns. logical track comparisons, Phoenix, New Hampshire, and for those folks who are handicapping this race, yes, you can use the spring race at Richmond as one of your data point. We know that it's a huge strategy track where things can change in a heartbeat. Just ask Denny Hamlin, who was able to get fresh tires, lead five laps, and win the race in the spring. But when you look back at what we saw in the spring, four drivers led 60 or more laps. None of them went on to win the race. Toyota has now won six of the last eight races at Richmond. They've dominated this track the same way Ford has controlled things at Michigan International Speedway. And we're starting to talk about drivers to watch. We may as well work from the bottom of the playoff field up, and we can start with Ryan Blaney, widely available at 14-1 this weekend. Blaney won the pole here in the spring, won the first stage, and led a race-high 128 laps before finishing seventh. Just two top tens, though, and no top fives in his last six races here. So keep that in mind. He did finish fourth at Phoenix, seventh, like we mentioned, at Richmond, and way back in the field at New Hampshire, where he came in 18th. When you look at Ryan Blaney's prospects this weekend, Worm, what are your initial thoughts?
Well, unfortunately for Ryan Blaney, it feels like he needs kind of the perfect race to win. I mean, how has a car with so much speed, you know, not found itself in victory lane? And I feel like a broken record every time I talk about Ryan Blaney in traffic. But if he goes out there and leads laps, then yeah, like if he finds himself somehow with track position at the end of this race, he can absolutely win. I don't think anyone will pass Ryan Blaney if he's leading. However, if he ever finds himself in traffic, he just can't get back to the lead. And you know what? I do think maybe there's a little bit of value on that 14-1 because I do expect him to qualify well. And, you know, I just think that unfortunately, he needs the cards to fall his way in order to win the race. And I know that this year is a little different than most years when it's, you know, just because the cars are so sensitive. But I just think, man, I had high hopes for Blaney this year, and he's shown speed. He just hasn't shown the ability to finish off a race and get to victory lane.
The driver that is listed as a favorite does trail Ryan Blaney in the season standings by 19 points. Martin Truex Jr., 6-1, more or less across the board, and he is matched up head-to-head with Ryan Blaney as one of NASCAR's featured matchups this weekend. Truex won the second stage here in the spring, led 80 laps, and finished fourth. And when you get some of the quotes from Truex, his comments directly, "Richmond, we were really good in the spring, but we were probably the second best car. We need to figure out how to be better than that. We'll go fight hard like we always do." And when you look at the 19, he showed race-winning speed at New Hampshire just a few weeks ago, a strategy that did him in before he finished in the top five. The irony is, fourth has actually been Martin Truex Jr.'s best finish at any track this season, so no podium finishes for him so far. But Richmond has been a track where he's experienced a ton of success. Three wins, six top fives in his last six trips, an average finish just outside the top two. And when you look at his laps led, he's led 80 or more laps in eight of the last nine at this track. And for a driver that for a long time couldn't get that elusive win at a short track, he's banished that notion. It's probably where he does some of his heaviest lifting these days.
Well, it's kind of crazy that a driver just all of a sudden says, "I want to be good at short tracks," and then they are. Like, I've never seen someone just decide to be good at a certain style of track and then just dominate. And Truex has been able to do that. I don't know. It's so much strategy. Todd, I couldn't believe the race earlier this year and how it became a strategy race versus just, you know, someone kind of out front dominating like we've seen in the past where someone leads a lot of laps. This was like, you know, someone like Truex would lead for 30 or 40 laps and then someone on a different strategy with fresher tires. It's like, well, they're going to pass him, but Truex has to pit one more time. And it kind of became this, hey, you really need to understand the strategy if you're going to bet this race. I think if it just came down to raw speed and someone that you think is going to be best, I do think that Martin Truex Jr. will have a top three car this weekend. But, you know, with the amount of strategy that goes into this race, I don't know that I'm willing to pay that 6-1 price until I know he's going to be fast after practice and qualifying. So that's kind of where I'm at with him. I expect him to be great. And you know what? I expect both him and Blaney to be competitive here. I think if you see Blaney qualify in the top three and you see Truex maybe 7th, 8th, or 9th, which I think is a very big possibility, it could get interesting. I think one of those guys could win a race between here and the end of the season for sure.
And you mentioned strategy. I think we'd be doing a huge disservice in the handicap to this race before we get into some of the the other drivers than talking about what we could see play out at Richmond, where tire fall-off is very much a thing. Now, I know racing conditions, it doesn't appear to be overly hot. Looks like the low 80s as far as the ambient temperature, and it doesn't look that humidity is going to play a major role, but you're not going to see any drivers at Richmond taking two tires. I can almost guarantee you of that.
No. You also won't see people stay out, you know, like we did at Michigan. I think that that's a level of unpredictability that we see at tracks with low tire wear that we just don't see at tracks like Richmond, you know, Homestead, Darlington, you know, any place where tires matter. And I think that that's helpful for bettors. However, when you can be on a two or three stop strategy, when it comes to tires, like that's where it gets really, really interesting. And it was hard to pass here for a track that typically has a ton of fall off and is really easier to pass. We didn't see that as much in this last race. So I kind of expect more of the same this week.
Yeah, slightly different conditions. It'll be very interesting to see what we get on track. We obviously talked about Martin Truex Jr., who finds himself amongst the JGR stable with the shortest odds this weekend. And sevens are more or less wild when you're talking about consensus pricing for the 18 and Kyle Busch, the 11 of Denny Hamlin, and the 20 of Christopher Bell. When I look at Kyle Busch, 6 career Richmond wins, although we mentioned earlier in the show, 8 straight finishes without a top 10 overall. Denny Hamlin, a 4-time winner here, including the spring race where he won more or less on strategy. Only 4 top fives all year long, which blew me away when I looked at my heat map, and 6 top tens, obviously not indicative of how well the 11 has run in terms of bringing a good piece to the track every weekend. And when we're looking at Christopher Bell, he won at the short flat track in New Hampshire a couple weeks ago. Bell has been just as good, if not better, at Richmond in the Xfinity Series than he was in New Hampshire, and we've seen how that's translated. Showed decently in the spring race, obviously his current form now much better, has 9 top 10 finishes in his last 15 overall since the Bristol Dirt Race way back when. When you look at the trio of JGR drivers not named Martin Truex Jr., Worm, what stands out to you?
Well, I think just Chris Bell. I mean, I think that, you know, Denny, it's not surprising. You know, he's fast week in and week out. And if Denny runs a race, a clean race, I think you could see him dominate. Where the one thing I don't know about Chris Bell is, like, I think Chris Bell has another gear, and I think that if he finds something, or he, you know, something clicks kind of later in the race, or he's maybe running a little bit different line with older tires, you could see him click off lap times that no one else is capable of running. I think you might see his teammates try to mimic that, but ultimately, I think Chris Bell, I mean, here's the thing. Are you going to take Chris Bell over Denny and Kyle Busch at Richmond?
No,
if they're
I
the
will
same
not.
Price, I can't do it, you know? But I will say, I think Bell has a ton of upside. I expect all three of those drivers to run really, really well. It's just a matter of can they run a clean race, and are they going to be on the proper strategy? Because, like I said, in years past, strategy was not a thing at Richmond, and with this car, it is. So I think it's very important to pay attention to that if you're live betting, because if you don't understand that, you should not be investing live at all, because that's what's going to dictate the winner of this race, especially under long green flag runs. Now, if there's a lot of cautions, you can just throw that out the window because everyone's going to be on the same strategy. So it'll definitely be interesting. I think Gibbs right now is showing the best speed on ovals and especially flat tracks. So all three of those guys will be very competitive.
Yeah, a lot of variables obviously going to play a role in what should be a race that'll go by pretty quickly watching these guys tick off laps. A driver that I guess I'll call a favorite, although he's not in the single digits, Chase Elliott, depending on where you look, a low of 9-1 I've seen, upwards of 10 or 11. Obviously appeared to be human over the last couple races after a string of 5 straight top 2 finishes, finished 16th at Indianapolis, came in 11th at Michigan, and to be honest, I'm not quite sure his car was even that good last weekend. Finished 14th here back in the spring. The last 6 trips to Richmond, his average finish is actually outside the top 10. Just 2 top 10 finishes in those races. How do you assess the 9 and his prospects to get to victory lane?
Well, just like every other week, I think the 9 will be about a 10th to 12th place car, and at a certain point in the race, I'll be like, well, there he is running top 4. I mean, that's just the way that team's operating. That's a championship type team right now with a maybe the seventh or eighth fastest car in NASCAR right now. So you know, I don't expect him to qualify super well, you know, probably not in the top five. I don't expect him to, you know, kind of race his way to the front instantly, but I do anticipate, you know, Gustafson getting him into a spot in the top three and have a chance to win this race. So typical Chase. I mean, you know what? Here's the thing. If Chase unloads really well, I'm excited to see if he just goes to the lead and dominates. Because the minute that team looks really, really fast in practice, look out, because they're firing on all cylinders. I don't know that it'll be this week. It could be Watkins Glen. But, yeah, that's just the way that nine teams operated all year. If they look average, they're good. And if they look, even when they don't, by the way, even when they don't win, they win. Like, there's only one driver that's done that this year. And by the way, he finished third and won the race. So it's the same stuff for the Golden Horseshoe right now. He'll finish well. He's hard to bet against right now.
Yeah, his 16 top 10s are a series best. And when you look at the nine, they've obviously built themselves quite the cushion going into the playoffs. So they could be tinkering and trying to figure out exactly what kind of machines they need to bring for the 10-race playoff stretch that'll obviously test some of their mettle. From the favorites to the best of the rest as far as the field, and we kind of come full circle on the four. Kevin Harvick, we've seen his number bounce around. Saw some books as high as 20-1 earlier in the week. That number no longer available. He's obviously getting a lot of buzz this week for his flat track prowess. Sixth at Phoenix, second at Richmond, fifth at New Hampshire. And when you're talking about Kevin Harvick, he puts one win in the bank. Now he plays a little bit of house money. Are you buying or selling the four, at least the way he's being priced in the market right now?
Yeah, I think there's some value on Harvick at 15. I you know, here's the thing. I don't think he's going to qualify super well. You know, he'll be probably outside the top 10. You know, I think 15th is probably where we'll see him qualify. He'll probably look pretty average in practice, but man, that guy, he's just so patient and he's able to work his way to the front. If they're on the right strategy, you know, Harvick will be there. You know, whether they have, you know, a lot's changed since the last Richmond race. So I think that they've definitely made strides, but they still don't have that short run speed, which I think is so important, especially if you're going to find yourself with a few cautions and a lot of restarts. It's really, really hard to lose three or four spots on a restart and then feel like you're passing the same guys every single run. So though I do think he'll be good, he just hasn't shown me short run speed that has me all over that 15-1 price, though I do think he's, you know, maybe a little bit of value there. Certainly at 20, there was a little bit, but 15's probably where he should be at this point in the week.
Always interesting to see how Harvick moves on race day when he doesn't show that speed in practice to make him look like an elite car. Oftentimes tough to quantify some of those intangibles that we've seen him take mediocre cars, turn them into race contending machines, and more importantly, cashing matchups for those folks that look to try and back the four week in, week out. Another driver that I think can be rather polarizing on a week in, week out basis would be the 22 machine of Joey Logano. Four top fives in his last six trips to Richmond. His average finish inside of seventh looks pretty good. He doesn't have a win during that stretch. When you look at how he's performed at similar comps this season, he hasn't been overly great. The finish is just not there. Eighth at Phoenix, 17th at Richmond, 24th at New Hampshire, as he was shuffled back because of strategy and a caution flag that never came for the 22 car at New Hampshire. But as far as his overall speed ranking, he's been good at flat tracks. Joey Logano, arguably one of the hardest drivers for me to handicap on a week in, week out basis. Hoping you could shed a little bit of light here.
Oh, okay. I wish I could do that. I mean, I thought that he was going to be average at best last weekend, and he was one of the only guys that was really fading in that first run, and that kind of told me that, hey, he didn't have the car underneath him. You know, he had some weird practice laps. I don't know even how that happened, but I was not high on Logano going into the week last week, but sure enough, Paul Wolf puts him in a situation where it's hard to pass and gives him the track position he needs, and sure enough, I mean, I think that Kevin Harvick should be sending Joey Logano a Christmas card this year, because he was able to get out to a 4-second lead, which even the Toyotas couldn't make up, and those Toyotas were flying. So I don't know. I think, listen, if you just were to tell me that you want to blindly bet Joey Logano at 20-1 to win at Richmond, I'd go, okay. I think that that's a decent argument. I think that that guy is good at a track like Richmond, and it, his practices have just been so spotty. You know, it was crazy how good he looked at Gateway and then still kind of lucky to get the win. I don't think Gateway correlates that much to Richmond when you look at just the way that the race played out and the strategy involved. You know, once you pitted the last time, once you had enough fuel at Gateway, you were done pitting for the day. And that just won't be the case here at Richmond. You know, I'm hoping Joey looks good, because I think that 20-1 price, I would have no problem backing him if his car looks fast in practice.
Well, I can tell you, we can definitely put a plus in the strategy category, because Joey will find himself in a good advantageous opportunity with a crew chief that you've described as one of the best gamblers, and getting those calculated risks to pay dividends, especially when things beyond just having race winning speed can impact who ultimately gets that race victory. Wasn't sure if there were any other drivers you wanted to highlight. I had one on my list that I just wanted to mention, but wanted to give you the opportunity to share any others that you're keeping your eye on, at least pre-week.
No, I think this is another week where, you know, Richmond in the past has been one of those places that I feel like, you know, we've had a clear edge. You know, and until earlier this year, and it was so hard to pass. And then when it became a strategy race, you know, once that happens, it's time to kind of sit back and let the week come to you, not go out there and try to force a play, or, you know, try to find a slight edge, whether it's like pit speed or something like that. Listen, if that's how deep you have to go to find an edge, then, you know, I'm not interested in that matchup. So, for me, it's just kind of like, hey, I wouldn't be shocked if, you know, Byron was good. I wouldn't be shocked if, you know, Reddick was good. You know, there's just so many guys that could be good this week, and I don't want to kind of develop too much of an opinion and let like confirmation bias kick in during practice. So, you know, I just think that it's a good week to kind of let things happen and then make your decision on Saturday afternoon after practice.
Well, you mentioned William Byron, and that's actually the driver that I did want to highlight briefly. I mean, he's qualified well at these kind of tracks all season long. Did finish third here in the spring race, 11th at New Hampshire. He's now gone 7 races himself without a top 10, and average finish during that span of 21st. So he has been the definition of being mired in mediocrity. 3 of the last 4 just outside the top 10. And I almost get the feeling that he is a good buy low candidate. And when you look at William Byron, you look at his teammate in Alex Bowman, they almost always feel like the other two in the HMS stable. I think both of those guys will be interesting to see how they unload, what they show in practice, and could be sleepers if they appear to have a little bit of speed this weekend. Want to remind all of you guys to follow Chris on Twitter. That's at Chris Wermy, ChrisWerme15. I'm Todd Furman. You can follow me there. Most importantly, follow the podcast at Bet the Board Pod. And the great part about this weekend, if things aren't going right on the track, we can always throw a banana in the tailpipe worm to give ourselves a little bit of a competitive advantage as we're walking pit road. But this is the time of the show where we always look to identify at least a little bit of an opportunity to try and find a pre-week position, and was hoping that you would uncover an investable opportunity for us for Sunday.
Yeah, I just got done talking about this driver, as he's really hard to bet against. However, I think that the upside outweighs the downside risk here when it comes to fading Chase Elliott. This is a featured NASCAR matchup, which is available on most legal sports books that we have. So I am going to go ahead and take Chris Bell. He's anywhere from -115 to -122 against Chase Elliott. I think right now that 20 team is as fast as they come, and Chase Elliott has been surviving off of running perfect races. And I don't think he's had the speed or I guess even the handling in the race car to go out there and win. I actually don't think that at all. And I think that Chris Bell has a race winning car week in and week out. So I'm going to go ahead and lock in that Chris Bell anywhere from -115 to -122 on the Golden Horseshoe boy, Chase Elliott.
A rare pre-week matchup for you, Wormser. And as always, want to remind you guys that the positions we take on the show that you're listening to, hopefully on Friday when it debuts, are going to be substantially smaller than what we share on Sunday, when you can see all of those updated on the Bet the Board podcast website. So make sure you're building out the portfolio. It doesn't make sense usually to jump in with 2 feet for the show matchups, but always want to try and get things started in a positive direction, and hopefully a little better fortune for us this weekend, backing the 20 than a top five we should have been able to cash at 2-1. Before we bid the listeners a fond farewell, and we'll reconvene next week in anticipation of more road course racing at Watkins Glen, anything else you'd like to get off your chest? Did you want to bash the NASCAR community? Did you want to take shots? Did you want to wish well wishes? I'm not sure where you're going when I give you your 2-minute closing remarks.
Well, I mean, I'm just hoping I make it to Richmond. Just got a text that my flight was canceled for tomorrow. So, that's okay. I'm in the queue to get a call back in like 4 hours and 27 minutes. So I have to stay awake that late, which is a real pain. But I'm excited to go to Richmond. I'm excited. I love watching the race live. It's so much fun. And I know that we're absolute nerds, especially me, when it comes to just lap times and trying to make live bets. So, like I said, anyone that is interested in meeting up, I just love to talk to NASCAR fans and talk about betting and you know, potential investments. So definitely reach out on social media, and if we can make it happen, we certainly will. So I'm excited for this weekend.
Looking forward to it. It's a track that I haven't been to, though that can be said about 30 tracks that NASCAR goes to on a week-in, week-out basis. So it'll be fun to check another box, fly across the country, and be there in person for what should be a race filled with plenty of bumping and banging with what's at stake for drivers trying to fight their way into the field of 16. Want to thank all of you, our loyal listeners, whether this is the 8th episode of Stay Green that you're tuning in for or it's the first time you found us. Encourage you to follow all of us on Twitter. Make sure you're checking for the best bet matchup that comes out on Sunday. And regardless of which way you choose to go, with a Chris Bell matchup ticket against Chase Elliott in hand come Sunday afternoon from Richmond Raceway, hopefully we'll see you at the window.
Cheers.